House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, February 13th, 2012, about 8:15. We're going out of order a little bit. We're going to put the public hearing on 4136 to the bottom of the stack here. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 4017.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 4017 will extend the interlock devices to people convicted of certain crimes to as of the last 5 years of the driving privileges restored following the suspension or revocation of the driving privileges. Mainly applies to people who've been convicted of manslaughter involving motor vehicle and other things like that. So, Chair, members of the committee, you have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you. We have a what's called a fiscal light. This has a priority subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee. You need to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and send it to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 4017.
Representative Krieger moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 4017. Is there any discussion?
Yes. Could we be told about what that amendment does?
Chair, members of the committee, Representative Tomei, you go over to page 3 of the bill, and on line 9, you delete crime and insert suspension or revocation. So the amendments to RS 813602, which is a motor vehicle code by section 1 of this 2012 Act, apply to suspensions or revocations that end on or after the effective date of 2012 of the Act.
It's a technical fix to change the word from crime to suspensions and revocations.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is there any objection to the amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4017, the Dash 1 amendments to the Ways and Means.
Representative Hicks moves House Bill 4017 as amended to Ways and Means. Any discussion?
Once again, so we have a fiscal light here, and that's been approved by the Speaker's offices, right?
That's why it's going to Ways and Means.
Okay.
There's some unexpected costs came up in that, which would normally kill it, so they're trying to work on that, but today's the day we have to move it. So
okay, thank you.
Co-chair?
Yes.
Just so the committee knows, there's a good chance that if this bill goes to Ways and Means, it will go to the subcommittee that I co-chair. And absent some sense of priority ranking from this committee, when there are limited resources for that subcommittee to appropriate, we have no guidance about what's most important. And if we send a bunch of bills that all cost money, we're essentially saying they're all equal. And it means that we're giving to another body, three of whom sit on this committee, but it includes other members, the choice of how to prioritize those. And I think that is an unfortunate circumstance, because some guidance from this committee about which the most important to fund would be really helpful.
Chair, Representative Nolan, would you want the chairs with staff to take a look at what we've passed that actually went down there from this committee and give you a sheet that kind of looked at that based on the vote and the discussions we heard?
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, no, I'd really like the committee to send only the ones that are really the most important. When you send everything, you're essentially saying there's no distinction. And if you send only the ones that are most important to fund, then that would get our attention.
This bill originally had no fiscal. It was all funded out of federal funds. Now something has come up, and so that's what we don't have the final answer on that. That's still being worked on. So I'd like to send it on down there, and if we may be able to make it cost-free, it would be great.
And Mr. Co-Chair, that would be great. And we will entertain all of them. will give all of them an equal shot at funding, but please understand that in the Public Safety Subcommittee, we are looking at reducing our state trooper sworn positions. We're looking at reducing prison guards. We're looking at some devastating public safety budget cuts, and some prioritizing would be helpful. That was the only point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wan.
Aye.
Representative Griffin.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Cheever.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye. Motion carries. We open a work session on House Bill 4146.
Chair, members of the committee, this bill has no fiscal impact. It allows expunction of juveniles charged or adjudicated for prostitution when the person was less than 18 years of age at the time of the offense. So, chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendments clarify that it only applies to that particular charge. So, if there are other charges that adjudication, they would not necessarily be expunged in the same process that this crime would be expunged. No fiscal. We have the paperwork. You have the dash two amendments. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, otherwise ready to go.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash two amendments into House Bill 4146.
Representative Krieger moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 4146. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 4146 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 4146 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion on that? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
I would like to say I'm glad we're sending a bill to the floor without having to go through Ways and Means. Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Aye. Representative
Wisner. Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Motion carries. Yeah.
Jefferson's
yes. Oh, Jefferson's going to be Courier. Open a work session on House Bill 4021.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4021 requires the Superintendent of State Police to commission employees of the Humane Society as human special agents if the employee is certified by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Chair, members of the committee, you have the what I understand the amendments the most preferable of the dash five. The main thing that they do going over on page two in lines 6 through 11, the superintendent may adopt rules to carry out the provisions of this section. The rules may include a description of the circumstances in which a humane special agent is prohibited from carrying a firearm while engaged in the enforcement of animal welfare laws. Mr. Chairman of the committee, we have the fiscal statements and revenue statements for this particular amendment. And if I remember correctly, it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee, Mr. Chairman of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does have a subsequent referral because we don't have the paperwork caught up. Is there?
Madam Chairman of the committee, we have the paperwork.
We do. And there
so
is
there's no need for suspension of the rules. We have the fiscal and the dash five. We have the revenue. We have the amount.
But so it needs to go to Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm. It has a priority, a subsequent referral.
Okay.
Ready? Yep. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash fives into House Bill 4021.
Representative Krieger moves the dash fives into House Bill 4021. Discussion.
Can you remind me again what the dash fives do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they basically they go through the bill and make some clarification in the language as it relates to potential liability and who's responsible for it, who's in charge. The main difference, as I said, on page 2, lines 9 through 11, the superintendent may adopt rules to carry out the provisions of this section. So that's an explicit grant of authority as it relates to rules. It can also be implicit. The rules may include a description of the circumstances in which a humane special agent is prohibited from carrying a firearm while engaged in the enforcement of animal welfare laws. And if you may remember, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the animal welfare laws are defined by referring to particular statutes that involve animal abuse.
Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. Bill, when you say we have the fiscal, are you referring to this February 10 document that says more analysis is necessary? Is that what you're referring to?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Schaffler, that's what is affectionately known as a fiscal light.
Okay.
Meaning that it's giving us the paperwork, yep, so we are able to move the bill to Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you.
Without the need to suspend.
Is there any objection to the dash fines? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4021 as amended to Ways and Means.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 4021.
Hicks.
There's a striking resemblance.
Thank you. Representative Hicks.
To the Ways and Means.
Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Schaffer?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Wisnet?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Harris?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Next, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4136. I have some people signed up. We're going to take testimony on that. And I have a request from two representatives to be here at 9:30. So what I'm going to do is we'll take testimony from those who want to testify now. Then we'll take a break and come back at 9:30. We're not going to be moving this bill.
So then I ain't coming back.
Okay, open a public hearing, House Bill 4136.
Magoozo. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4136 comes to you from Representative Greenlick, permits prosecuting attorney to investigate and prosecute suits against insurer or other person that commits prohibited insurance practices.
Okay, Mr. Steve Patterson, J.L. Wilson, and Ed Davis, please. Please go in any order you'd like. And remember to identify yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Steve Patterson. I'm an officer and general counsel for Oregon Mutual Insurance Company, located in McMinnville, Oregon, since 1894. I'm here this morning, although I hesitate to leave our little bastion of Oregon. I'm here this morning because nothing on my calendar was more important been sharing my concerns about House Bill 4136. The impact of this bill on a company like Oregon Mutual, who tries to compete with a lot of larger national insurers, is pretty profound. House Bill 4136 imposes unique burdens. It'll increase litigation, claim settlement, additional compliance costs will be incurred, all of which will make it more difficult for my company to compete. For that reason alone, I'm opposed to the bill. But the issue promoted by the bill is a cause for wider concern for insurers, but also for small businesses and individuals who have to buy insurance. In short, House Bill 4136 will, as other bills of its kind have, increase the number and severity of personal injury and property damage lawsuits, will increase litigation costs, insurance settlement costs, insurance loss costs, all of which contribute to the price that we as a company charge and that individuals and businesses have to pay. In addition, state court filings will increase, burdening our court system with thousands of new actions at a time when they're struggling for the resources to handle the suits they already have. Now, for the sins of my youth, I spent some time in Sacramento, California, with another insurance company after they had had this law in the 80s. And during the 90s, there was a move in the legislature in California to pass another second lawsuit bill. The California legislature did pass that bill, and within months, 1.6 million signatures were gained by California consumers, and it was overturned at the ballot box by 3-1. Those laws in other states, who either have or had them, have taught us some things. It increases lawsuits, insurance claims, settlement costs, and premiums. As an insurance company, our primary duty and first duty is to our policyholder. We have a contract with them. We also have a duty to protect the policyholder when a third party suffers damage for which our insured is responsible. No company succeeds or succeeds long mistreating its customers. 4136 offers the opportunity for a second lawsuit, which gets in between the insurance company and its policyholders by raising the specter that you could be sued by a third party in your defense of your insured. This second lawsuit law in California caused auto injury lawsuits to double in less than 10 years. Court costs increased, insurance premiums rose up to 30%. After 10 years, the California Supreme Court overturned the second lawsuit law, and the personal injury and property damage lawsuits dropped by tens of thousands. In overturning the law, the court pointed out the number of unwarranted settlement demands by claimants and the inflated settlement paid by insurance companies. It's simply leverage, and it'll drive up the cost even where we don't see suits filed in court. A decade later, when the legislature, as I mentioned, passed the law again, the voters overturned it almost immediately. Oregon has existing remedies for insurance company misbehavior. I can tell you our company has a great relationship, but a respectful relationship, with the Department of Insurance here in Oregon. We take direction from our regulators seriously. We respond to our policyholders and to third-party claims in a court of law. These statutes and regulations that we already have provide strong consumer protection without the excessive and costly lawsuits which would come about as a result of this bill. I ask you to oppose House Bill 4136.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. Our primary reason for opposition is because our members, when they purchase an insurance policy from someone like Steve or a similar company, 4136 and bills like it put our insurance companies in a conflict of interest position with their insured, which is my members, which is either they go to bat for us, and in the process doing so, a second lawsuit comes down the pike because they go to bat for the people who pay the premium. And that's an untenable position for our members, and it drives up costs. Just some lines of insurance that you know, that are of interest to our members, things like commercial auto, your typical slip and falls, even your employment law disputes would all be subject to things like 4136. You're talking about increased costs in litigation, attorney's fees, settlement costs. Mr. Patterson alluded to the experience in California. In Washington, a first-party lawsuit bill was filed or passed by voters 3 or 4 years ago, which has resulted in a net increase in loss costs just in homeowners insurance alone of $190 million. Another state with a similar provision, Montana, has costs that are by far and away greater than any other state in that region. So, in other words, there's no state that has enacted this that hasn't stuck out like a sore thumb and becomes a terrible place to do business with regard to insurance costs. Oregon should not follow suit because, you know, our members, insurance is sort of a necessary evil, okay? But it's passing something like 4136 takes money out of productive uses, job creation, product development, all the things you want your business to do, and puts that money into settlement costs, attorney's fees, litigation, things you would not prefer to spend your money on. So AOI opposes this bill. We appreciate the hearing, but ask that you do not move it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ed Davis. I'm a senior account executive with MAPS Insurance Services here in Salem.
I've been in the business since 1965 at both the company and the agency level with most all lines of insurance, currently focusing on the property and casualty side. I'm speaking today on behalf of members of the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers of Oregon, the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon and Idaho, and the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, as well as the thousands of licensed independent or licensed agents in the state of Oregon, both for direct writing companies and independent agency companies. Just as a matter of note, most of us are paid on commission. So when you enact legislation that raises prices for our customers, we make more money. So the point I want to make is that when we speak on behalf of our clients, we are actually speaking against our own self-interest, because the more the costs go up, the more money we make. However, there are some areas of concern in this legislation that impact insurance agents, perhaps intentionally, perhaps otherwise, for the actions of insurance companies. And most of us as agents have little or no authority in regard to the handling of claims. We simply report them, and in these days they're often reported directly to the insurers. So this bill unfairly targets agents who have no control over a lot of the process, but certainly makes us potentially vulnerable to be included as defendants in these lawsuits. As a result, we would expect to see higher costs for errors and omissions insurance, whether we're involved in the lawsuits or not. So I really appeal to you to look at the situation where you have budgetary issues, especially in the court systems, as has already been mentioned, and not add additional burden on the existing overworked and overburdened court system.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you just give us a couple, any of you, just some real-world examples of scenarios that you're worried about? What kinds of claims would arise under this bill that don't arise today? Because we haven't really had an explanation of what this would do.
Well, as an example, Mr. Patterson, Coach Garrett, and members of the committee, an example might be where you have a business that has been alleged by an injured third party to have caused some injury, and there may or may not be clear facts about whose fault this really was. And so that third party is trying to get a settlement from the business's insurance company. And in the case of the business's insurance company, their job is, even if they're providing coverage for the business, their job is to provide a defense and only pay out if, in fact, their client is legally responsible for having caused those damages. So it becomes a matter of whose fault it is. It's very different between whether are you covered or are you legally responsible. And so people who think they've been injured but may have been their own fault, slip and falls being a good example, the question becomes, are they going to think the insurance company is trying to run them around the bush, and the insurance agent for the business, where the insurance company's obligation is to try to determine legal liability and not pay out if there's not legal liability. So the third party becomes wants to use the threat of a lawsuit as leverage to get a settlement where they're really not entitled to one. So that would be an example of something. And we've had a situation here recently where there was a slip and fall in a premise where our client rented the premise from the owner of the building. The slip and fall occurred in a portion of the premise that they had absolutely no operations in. The individual slipped on a wet spot going into a restroom in the public area of the building. The building owner, of course, transferred it back to us under the building use agreement. The injured party wasn't sure where the water came from. Lots of ideas here, but if the injured party were inclined simply to say, I want somebody else to pay for that, they're going to file a lawsuit and name everybody involved, and insurance agents are potentially going to be named in lawsuits whether they have anything to do with the defense of that claim or not. So it's a very complex legal situation, and there are a lot of existing remedies through the Fair Claim Settlement Practices Act. The Insurance Division has authority over both agents and companies in terms of their compliance and with the provisions of that act and their fair treatment of both claimants and their own policyholders. So adding another level of litigation really doesn't do much except improve things for attorneys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If my memory serves me right, we've seen this concept here before, and there's a lot of problems with it. But while going over the analysis again here this morning, I would hope the good sponsors of this bill, who clearly want to grant or direct the court to grant attorney fees and court fees to the prevailing party, will join us in another bill that is not so complex that would grant direct the court to grant attorney and court fees to the prevailing party in a land use appeal. Okay, that's what we need to do around here, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. And I hope they remain consistent in their philosophy, the good sponsors of this bill.
Thank you. Representative Romaine.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Patterson, you mentioned that in California the insurance premiums rose, or maybe it was the cost, I'm not sure which you meant, but that rose 30% in the period that this law in California was in effect. So can you tell me how much the premiums or the cost of insurance in Oregon went up in that same period of time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, the reference I made to the costs with regard to California, I don't have a comparison with what Oregon was. It was the number of lawsuits and the severity, which means the claims paid out, doubled in California over the time that they had that law in effect. Yeah. And when the Supreme Court got rid of the law, all those trends got back to surrounding state
lawsuits,
trends.
I understand that. But what we're talking about is the cost to the constituents, to the citizens. So I understand in California, you might look in your notes there, but you did make the statement that is either the cost or the premiums rose 30%. And as we're all aware in Oregon, our insurance costs also continue to rise every year. So I'm just wondering if we could compare those two. I understand you don't have that information with you now, but if you could get it to us in the future, that would be really helpful.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. Jason Carlisle.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Carlisle, Linn County District Attorney. I'm representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association today. While we certainly recognize that there's much that goes on with the insurance industry that frustrates people, we just wanted to let you know we're probably not the right tool to deal with this problem. This is an entire new and unfamiliar and complex area of the law. We have no expertise at all in that. To say that I know nothing about it is a great kindness. We're just not equipped to handle it. And as you know, as district attorneys now, we are spending more of our time figuring out what we're not going to do anymore rather than new duties to figure out other things that we could help the public with. I'm sure you've heard about Lane County, who's going to take dramatic cuts in their DA's office. And a friend of mine who's the DA in Josephine County, they're going to have their attorney staff, and I am spending time stopping doing things that I'm doing now. One other thing you might keep in mind is we don't have investigators as a general rule in DA's offices, so we don't have anybody to go and look at the insurance industry to see what they're doing either. Are there other models that might be used to get to this? Sure, but I'm not going to dump on anybody else in these tough budgetary times. But if there was ever an exploration of other models about how to get this, we'd be happy to be involved in that conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Carlisle, I take it that the more appropriate place for this would be the Attorney General's office rather than the District Attorney's office. So we
Well, I like the Attorney General, and I like said I don't want to dump on anybody, but yes. Because they would have a better chance of having some expertise to deal with this business. Because, I mean, it's a whole body of law.
I know.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Committee will be in recess until 9:30.